OU Israel presents.
Come in. Welcome.
Shalom and welcome to another issue of Torah Tidbits Audio. I'm your host Phil Chernofsky, and this show is for Parshat Toledot. Recording and first broadcast is Thursday, Yom Chamishi, the Shabbat Parshat Toledot, the 27th day of Cheshvan, 5768, the 8th day of November. This Shabbat is not only the reading of Toledot, it is also Mevorchim Chodesh Kislev. We bless and announce the upcoming month, specifically its first day, which is Machar Chodesh, which means Sunday. Saturday night Sunday is Rosh Chodesh Kislev. It is a one-day Rosh Chodesh because this year Cheshvan has only 29 days. So this Shabbat is Toledot, Mevorchim, and Machar Chodesh. Psalm 130, Tehillim Kuf Lamed. Shir ha-ma'alot mima'amakim karaticha Adonai. Adonai shima v'koli, tihiena aznecha kashuvot l'kol tachanunai. Imavonot tishmor yah Adonai miya amod, ki imacha hasalicha l'ma'an tivare. Ki viti Adonai kiveta nafshi v'lidvaro hocholti. Nafshi l'Adonai, mi shomerim laboker, shomerim laboker. Yachel Yisrael el Adonai, ki im Adonai hachesed v'harbe imo fedut, v'hu yifde et Yisrael mikol avonotav. Achinu kol beit Yisrael hanatunim batzara uvashivya, ha'omedim bein bayam uvein bayabasha, ha'makom yirachem aleihem v'yotzieim mitzara lirvacha u'miafela l'ora u'mishibud l'gu'ula hashta ba'gala uvizman kariv v'nomar amen. When Rosh Chodesh follows immediately upon Shabbat, we have not only Shabbat Mevorchim, Rosh Chodesh benching on that Shabbat, but, as I mentioned before, a special Haftarah of Machar Chodesh. In other words, that Haftorah, which is only said when Sunday is Rosh Chodesh and Shabbat is not, and even then not in all cases because of some other reasons, it preempts the regular weekly Haftorah, and it makes a statement. Rosh Chodesh is coming. There is a prayer which is found in the Motzoi Shabbat section of a Sidur for any Motzoi Shabbat, but especially when it's also Rosh Chodesh, this prayer kicks in, and it's a prayer for a blessing from God for the coming month. But it's interesting that it comes in the context of the Shabbat, and specifically the follow-through of Shabbat, which is called Motzoi Shabbat. Different musical artists have put it to music. The one I would like to play for you is a beautiful version of it by Mutti Kornfeld and Sons. Yehi HaChodesh Hazeh.
Achoydesh hazeh, ki nevuas abi choyzeh. Ishoma, ishoma, b'vayzeh. Koy tzosoy, v'koy simchok. Chozok imale, mishalo yiseinu. Oh,
shaze ki nevuas avi khoize
khoize
ishoma ishoma yevaize
kol sostoy bikol simcha
khozakim ame mishalaisenu Amis Yasem Akoshasenu Behu Yishlav B'maseyoteinu Brocho V'ha'atzlocho
Bozokim
Alei
Mishaloyseinu
Mishaloyseinu
Amis Yasem Akoshasenu Behu Yishlav
There is an issue that I think of every time Parshat Toledot rolls around, and it's because of a very good friend of mine, a friend that I went to kindergarten, 8 years of elementary school, 4 years of high school, 4 years of college, and 3 years of graduate school together with, and we're still friends, even though he doesn't live in Israel and we don't see each other that often, but this made an indelible impression. He, in elementary school, used to complain every time we went over Toledot that he felt sorry for dear Uncle Esav, who seemed to get the raw end of the deal all the time, and he seemed to be genuinely a nice guy. In fact, to support the nice guy theory, the Gemara says there is no one who better respected his father than Esav. And it's definitely to his credit, to the point where Yaakov Avinu was afraid of Esav because of his kibud av va'em. Yaakov, because of the circumstances, left his father's house. Esav stuck around. And Yaakov ended up in Laban's house for over 20 years and didn't come back till much later. And he felt that the lack of the opportunity to be right on the spot and respect his father would put him at a disadvantage in any kind of battle, physical or spiritual, with Esav, who had all of those credit points. Nonetheless, the Gemara makes the following statement. On the pasuk, Vayavo Esav min hasadeh, Vayozed Yaakov Nazid, Yaakov was preparing this lentil dish, Vayavo Esav min hasadeh v'hu ayef. And Esav came back from the field, and he was exhausted. He was tired. The Gemara says, Chamisha, in the name of Rabbi Yochanan, Chamisha aveirot avar oto rasha bayom hahu. On that very day, which tradition tells us was the day that Avram Avinu died, and Yitzchak was mourning his father, and Yaakov was preparing a mourner's dish for Yaakov, which is not, as they do today, bagels from Holy Bagels with cream cheese and a hard-boiled egg, but in those days it was lentil soup. Yaakov was preparing it. Esav comes back and asks for some of that red stuff. So obviously he was using red lentils, but the Gemara says on that day he violated five serious sins. Ba al na'araha ma'orasa, he raped a betrothed maiden. V'horaget ha'nefesh, and he killed somebody. V'chafar b'tchiyat ha'meitim, and he denied the revival of the dead. V'kafar ba'ikar, and he denied the essential of belief in God. V'shat al ha'bechorah, and he disparaged the firstborn's position and right. Ba'al na'araha ma'orasa, how do we know, says Rabbi Yochanan, that's a little misleading for me to use the term, how do we know, because you'll see what I'm going to say about it in a moment, but Ketiv Hacha, it says here, Vayavo Esav min hasadeh, he came from the sadeh, the field, Uchtiv Hatam, and it says later in the Torah, in Parsha Kitetzei, Ki basadeh mitza'ah, it's the inyan of rape there, and it says the man found her in the field, and therefore we give her the benefit of having cried out for help, but there was nobody to hear her, and that's why we don't hold her to blame, but only the man who had relations with her. There it's a whole issue, which we're not going to go into now, as to whether it was actual rape, or it was seduction, or it was consent. And if it was consensual, which the term there is used, that it happened in the city, and therefore she would have had someone to help her if she called out, and she obviously didn't, and therefore she's held accountable, but in the case of Basadeh. But that's not the point. The point is the Gemara uses the two psukim, one here, that Esav came in from the Sadeh, from the field, and there the word Sadeh associated with the rape of a betrothed maiden, and concludes, and again, that's a misleading word that I'm using now, that was one of the things Esav did on that day. I'll give one more to that when we look at it. Haraget ha'nefesh, he killed someone. Ketiv hacha v'hu ayef, it says here that he was tired. Uchtiv hatam, in Yirmiyahu, there's a pasuk about eifa nafshi lahorgim, associating the word ayef with killers. Now, this was my friend's complaint, and this is my not complaint, because I'm not complaining about it, but this is my opening salvo. Why can't sadeh mean a field? And why can't ayef mean tired? In other words, read the words the way they're written in the Torah. Yaakov is preparing Nezid Adashim. Let's even give Esav the benefit that he didn't know that Avraham Avinu had passed away yet, and he definitely knew Avraham Avinu, and he didn't know that his father was in mourning, and all he saw was his brother cooking this dish, and he came home exhausted from his day in the field, and he asked for some of that. Why do we jump in the Gemara down Esav's throat, and I'm asking it in a baiting way? This is not the way you're supposed to ask the question. I'm asking it purposely like that. Why do we jump on Esav and say that wicked person on this very day raped someone and killed someone? The other things, tie in with different phrases in the psukim. We don't have to get into all of them now. But rape and murder is bad enough. Now, the question is a non-question, which is my answer. The non-answer, the non-questionness of it, is that it isn't that Rabbi Yochanan and his fellows sat down and said, how can we vilify Esav from the wording in these psukim so that he looks like the Russia that he is? Oh, I know, the word sadeh has a negative connotation associated with rape. The word ayef has a negative connotation associated with murder. Therefore, let's read those things into these words, in essence, putting a light on Esav, which you don't necessarily get from the written word. If that were to be the case, I would have sympathy with my friend's challenge. It looks like a hatchet job on dear Uncle Esav. The fact of the matter is, and this is to me a very important issue, and it's not just in the story part of Torah called Agadata, but it's in the halachic part of Torah as well. It's not that there was a wording in the pasuk which Chazal were perplexed by and didn't know how to understand it and made up something. I don't accept that. I believe that there is, was, and is an oral tradition passed down simultaneous with the Torah that said that Esav was a Rasha, that he did not manifest his evil until Avraham Avinu died, for which he is given credit, nor did he really want to do things in his father's knowledge. You have the psukim later, where after Yaakov gets the bracha, having already gotten the bechorah, and the fact that the word bracha and bechora are the same letters, just rearranged, I don't think is a coincidence. There is a message in there someplace. But what Esav says bilibo in his heart is, I will wait for the days of mourning for my father, meaning I'll wait till he dies before I kill Yaakov. And Rivka got wind of the situation, which Rashi says was by Ruach HaKodesh. Pun was not intended there, but got wind of it with Ruach HaKodesh, has a play on words there, that Esav did not confide his intentions to anybody. He thought it. The Torah tells us that he thought it, and the Torah tells us that Rivka found out about it. And Rashi concludes that it was through Ruach HaKodesh. One way or the other, though, the tradition that was passed down as part of oral Torah, which I have many, many examples that emphasize the fact that this is not to be separated from the written word, although detractors from this idea we've had throughout history, notably the Tzedokim and the Karaites, and today their incarnations in other branches or forms of or schools of thought of Judaism, who say, you know, keep your Gemara, keep your oral tradition, let's look at the words, and they create a whole new thing from the words of the Torah. That's a very dangerous thing to do. Now, this is a totally different way of seeing it. Esav was a Rasha. How do you know tradition? An oral tradition, which is part of Torah Sheba'al Peh, passed down through the generations, simultaneous with the written Torah. How do you know that on that day that we're talking about, he did X, Y, and Z, or W, or V, W, X, Y, and Z? Because that's our tradition. Who made the connection between the tradition that he killed someone and the words, Ayef here, and in the context of Ayef with murder, that there are two possibilities. It could have been part of the tradition, or it could have been that that aspect to it, the link from Torah Shebichtav and Torah Shebaal Peh, was made by Rabbi Yochanan, or Chachmei HaMishnah, or Chachmei HaTalmud, and that I accept. I don't accept that they created it from scratch without the tradition existing. And it makes all the difference in the world. Now, it's not the Tanaim and Amoraim doing a hatchet job on Esav, it's HaKadosh Baruch Hu passing down a tradition to Moshe and onward that this is Uvda, and it gives us an important perspective on these things. In a halachic context, just to give one example, when a man steals in the time of Sanhedrin and is caught and cannot pay, cannot make restitution, the Torah says, V'nimkar b'gnevato. He is sold into indentured servitude to pay off his debt. Question. If a woman steals and is caught and can't make restitution, is she sold into indentured servitude to become an Oma Ivriya or a Shivcha Yisraelita or whatever term there would be? The answer is no, she's not. It applies to men and not to women. How do we know? The Gemara says, it does not say in the Torah, V'nimkar bagneva, the thief shall be sold because of the theft. It says gnevato, his theft. The Gemara says gnevato v'lo b'gnevata, not her theft. I don't accept, I don't believe, and I check this with people, and they agree with what I say, that Chazal made this up. They cannot come before a judge, a case of a woman who stole, was caught, and can't make restitution, and it's up to a human to fill in a blank. Well, the Torah says something, but we don't know if it applies to men and women. Okay, it does. Or okay, it doesn't. It doesn't go like that. There's Torah Shebichtav. Torah Shebichtav says, V'nimkar b'gnevato. The Torah Shebaal Peh on that pasuk says, a man is sold as an Eved Ivri, a woman is not. You want to make the link to the grammatic play on V'nimkar b'gnevato? Good way of linking a written word with an oral law. I don't believe it was a way of making a judgment about what you should do with that woman, yes or no.
You are listening to Torah Tidbits audio for Parshat Toledot, and let's have a listen to a nice song from that album I introduced you to last week, Ralph Levitan. A very pleasant album, this track, from Kabbalat Shabbat, none other than Lecha Dodi.
שבת נקבלה, התנערי
Listener, whoever I am speaking to now, listens to the show, but it is first recorded on Thursday afternoon. It is first broadcast later Thursday afternoon. It goes on to the OU website and the Arut Sheva website Thursday, Friday, Lekrat Shabbat. And therefore, I always feel that this is an Erev Shabbat program, and that's why a lot of the musical selections are related to the upcoming Shabbat. I want to preface my next comment with the fact that I am a firstborn, a Bechor in my family. I take that position very seriously. Probably as a kid I lorded it over my brothers, but probably not in that obnoxious a way, because I get a certain feel from both my brothers that they recognize that position. And of course it's a title, which really doesn't have any bite to it. Officially, in the laws of inheritance, a Bechor gets a double portion of inheritance, and today there are halachically acceptable ways of equalizing the share of all heirs by the choice of the parent. But a Bechor is still a Bechor, and psychologically, I've always enjoyed being the firstborn. Didn't have much of a choice about it. nor did my brothers have that choice for not being a Bechor. I say all of this because in the book of Bereshit, and we see it here in this week's Parsha of Toledot, there is a lot to be said that it's no great shakes to be a Bechor, meaning a firstborn. Esav was the firstborn by a mere couple of minutes over Yaakov, and he sells his Bechorah, his first birthright, to Yaakov. And the question then is, you can't really sell being born first. So obviously, what it meant and what it means is somewhat of a transferable item, because it doesn't only mean the biological fact of first birth. It has to do with earning the position, whatever it is, and wanting it. And in the case of Yaakov, he did want it. In the case of Esav, he didn't. You go back to the beginning of the Torah. Cain was the firstborn. Abel, second. Cain's offering to God was not accepted. Abel's was. And Cain committed the first act of homicide, fratricide in the world. You have Yishmael being born first to Avraham, but not from Sarah, and Yitzchak. Ki v'Yitzchak yikorei lecha Zara. Yitzchak was to carry on the line of Avraham. And I mentioned already Yitzchak's prodigy, namely Esav and Yaakov. It was Yaakov. And Yaakov had Reuven first, and Reuven lost out on the double portion, which went to Yosef, the firstborn of Yaakov's beloved Rachel, and the kingship was lost to Yehuda, a younger brother of Reuven, and the kahuna, the priesthood, was lost to Levi, a younger brother of Reuven. And when it comes time at the end of the book of Bereshit for Yaakov to bless Yosef's children, and Yosef, very sensitive to the issue, presents Menashe to the right-hand side of Yaakov so he can place the right hand on his head when he blesses him, and Ephraim to the left, Yaakov switches his hands. This very much bothers and frightens Yosef, who tries to put the hands back on the biologically appropriate sequence of his sons, and Yaakov says, I know what I'm doing. Menashe will be great, but Ephraim will be greater. And you go into the book of Shemot, and you find that it is Moshe, second son of Amram and Yocheved, not the first, who was Aharon, is the one that has the higher position. And it goes on and on. So the people in Bereshit and onward are not necessarily a testimonial to how great it is per se to be a Bechor, but perhaps the bottom line is that there are some things that are hereditary, and it's not everything that is, and there is merit that has to go into the equation. I would also add that Yitzchak's intention to bless Esav was not necessarily because he was the firstborn. It was because there was a special relationship that he had with Esav, who fed his father, and perhaps there was a perception by Yitzchak that Esav needed his love and his attention more than Yaakov, who can fend for himself. I don't know if I want to get into that now, but it's ironic how this echoes in modern times, in regular families, where you have a special needs child which gets a lion's share of parents' attention, and other siblings feel often, what am I, chopped liver? And even though my father, my mother tells me, no, but you're normal and you can take care of yourself, but your brother, your sister, whatever, needs our special attention, it doesn't always work like that. Anyway, I'm getting off onto something which I really don't want to go in that direction. You have then the disturbing episode, and I'll tell you why I call it disturbing. I am not working just on the wording in the Torah, the written Torah, but I'm talking about the oral law and the oral Torah's presentation of the topic. So I believe that Yaakov and Rivka did not plot to cheat Esav out of a blessing that he was to get from Yitzchak. Rivka engineered Yaakov's receiving the bracha that he was supposed to get. Why did it have to be in this deceptive manner? I don't know. And I haven't come across, or I don't remember coming across, a particularly satisfying explanation. But I believe, and I think it's important to accept, that it had to be done this way. Let's put it like this. It is clear from what happens later that Yaakov's deception of his father Yitzchak, even though it was at the behest of his mother, Rivka, and even though it had the approval of God, according to Targum Unklus, it was a prophecy to Rivka that this should be done. Yaakov was doing, let's say, what God wanted him to do. Why did he suffer from it? His children deceived him later in a startlingly similar way to the way he deceived his father. He deceived his father with goat meat, which his mother prepared the way his father likes it, to resemble the taste of perhaps the mountain goat or the ibex that Esav would have trapped and prepared and served his father. So he was deceived with a goat. When Yaakov says to his mother, maybe my father will feel me and see that I am smooth skin instead of the rough Esav, and he'll know that I have deceived him and cursed me rather than blessed me, the mother prepares goat skin to put on his neck and on his arms, that if he were to be felt there by the blind Yitzchak, he would feel hairy and rough like his brother. So he wore a garment, in addition to these goat skins, a leather garment of Esav's, which had a smell that Yitzchak recognized. He was deceived. Yaakov deceived his father Yitzchak with a garment and with goats. Later, the brothers who plot to do away with Yosef, Yaakov's favorite, sell him into slavery and prepare a story to bring back to their father Yaakov. They take a goat. They slaughter the goat. They take Yosef's multicolored coat, the coat of stripes, and dip it in the blood of the goat, present it to the father and says, here, look what happened to your son Yosef. And Yaakov half believes that his son was mauled and killed by a predator. They deceived their father Yaakov with a garment and a goat. A coat and a goat even rhymes better. And it is clear that this is midah keneged midah, measure for measure punishment to Yaakov. The nagging question is, if Yaakov was supposed to do what he did, if he was commanded to do it by his mother, backed up by what in essence is God's command, why was he punished? Why, when he was presented to Paro and Paro asked him how old he was, did he say, 130 bitter, bad years, and I will never attain the years of my father and grandfather? This was something that was proper to do, the taking of the bracha from Yitzchak, because it belonged to Yaakov. Why was he punished? I don't have a good answer. I have a mashal, an analogy. There are situations in life, unfortunately, that a person is very ill and must save his life by taking a very serious medication or drastic medical procedures. And sometimes there are serious side effects, loss of hair, nausea, or worse. So if a person is abusing drugs, we understand why his body suffers from it. But if a person is taking a medication or taking a procedure which he must take in order to save his life, why should he be plagued by a side effect? An answer with a shrug is, that's the way it works sometimes. We're dealing with a world we don't understand all of the ins and outs of the way God works, and it's true, it would be an easier, more straightforward story if Yaakov would have been born first, then he would have had the birthright, and then he would not have had to take it away from Esav, and Yitzchak, if he would have not been blind to Esav, according to the commentaries, he was blinded to the personality, the character of Esav, so he would have given the bracha to Yaakov straightforward, right out, and maybe Yaakov's children would not have had that friction with Yosef, and would not have deceived their father, but that's all. Wasted speculation, because it goes against what happened. The Torah tells us what happened. All we can do with it is try to understand it and learn from it. And I believe that even though it's not a great answer, I think it's a very on-the-mark answer, that just because Yaakov was doing what he was supposed to do doesn't mean that he doesn't pay the price of what in essence was a deception of his father. On the topic of the bracha, the blessing that Yitzchak intended to give Esav and ended up giving Yaakov, even though Esav was horrified by the experience and cried for it, we see that Yitzchak did not hold anything against Yaakov. On the contrary, Vayikra Yitzchak el Yaakov Vayevarechoto. After all of this happened, Yitzchak calls Yaakov and he blesses him with an additional blessing. Vayitzavehu, and he commands him and he tells him not to take a wife from the local girls and go to Padan Aram, and gives him a very special blessing known as Birkat Avraham, and God will bless you and you'll flourish, and he should give you V'yiten Lecha, the same words that he used in the other bracha which he supposedly intended for Esav, which Yaakov got, V'yiten Lecha Elokim Ital HaShamayim U'Mishmanei HaAretz. Here it's V'yiten Lecha et Birkat Avraham Lecha Ulzaracha Itach L'rishtecha et eretz megurecha asher natan Elokim la'Avraham. The land which God promised Avraham Avinu and me shall be yours as well. So there's certainly no negative reaction of Yitzchak from Yaakov's having taken the bracha, except for that initial reaction in front of Esav of charada, of trembling, because of the way the events worked themselves out. One more point that I'd like to share is how Rivka handled the situation after the Yaakov-Esav blessing from Yitzchak issue. The Torah tells us that Esav said in his heart that I will wait until my father passes away and I will kill my brother Yaakov. Vayugad l'Rivka, Rivka was told about this. Rashi says it was by a divine intuition, a divine message, that what Esav was going to do, and she calls Yaakov, and she says to him, Esav, your brother is planning to kill you. I suggest you get out of here, and you go to my brother Lavan's house. And then she gets Yitzchak to also send Yaakov away, but for the other reason of finding a suitable bride, and the plan works out well together. Rivka did not tell her husband Yitzchak that Esav was going to kill Yaakov, was planning to kill Yaakov, and we could only speculate as to why she didn't tell him that. maybe she didn't want to disillusion him to Esav, or maybe she felt she wouldn't be believed. One way or the other, she handled it in a very proper way by bringing up the other issue, which was not made up. It was a genuine issue of her not wanting Yaakov to marry a local Canaanite, and therefore, when Yitzchak sends Yaakov to Lavan's house, ostensibly to find a suitable shidduch, he was also protecting him from his brother's wrath. On that note, I will wish you a Shabbat Shalom, Lehishtameach.